I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel delayed a cabinet vote Thursday on the long-awaited ceasefire deal that would pause the fighting in the Gaza Strip and release dozens of hostages. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman has more from Jerusalem.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says there still is no agreement. He's blaming Hamas. He says the group is trying to make last-minute changes to the deal. Hamas denies these allegations and says it's committed to the agreement. Two hardline partners in Netanyahu's governing coalition have come out against the deal and threatened to possibly bring down the government over it. It's not clear how serious this crisis is, but it has forced Netanyahu to delay a planned cabinet vote that was meant to ratify the agreement.
AP correspondent Joe Fetterman. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Thursday defended President Joe Biden's administration's policies on the Gaza war as protests interrupted his final news conference. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
At the State Department, Blinken called the Gaza ceasefire deal a relief for Israelis and Palestinians alike.
It's also a moment of historic possibility for the region and well beyond,
saying he expects the deal to be implemented this weekend.
How does it feel to have your legacy be genocide?
But as he spoke, people in the room accused Blinken of ignoring Israeli violence against Palestinian civilians.
Criminal! Why aren't you in the Hague?
They were rare, if not unprecedented, protests in the State Department briefing room. Blinken says questions about how the U.S. handled the war are fair.
And they'll be asked for a long time.
But says the administration had to focus on one thing.
Where we could actually get an end to a conflict, an end to suffering, and the prospect of something better.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. South African authorities face growing anger over their handling of a standoff with illegal miners trapped in an abandoned gold mine. Police said on Thursday the death toll from the incident has reached at least 87. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Authorities may face an investigation over their initial refusal to help the miners and instead smoke them out by cutting off their food supplies. Community groups launched their own rescue attempts when authorities said last year they would not help the hundreds of miners because they were what they called criminals. Michael Charles, a community volunteer helping the rescue operation, told the AP,
"This government make a plan and they must go to court, they must account for these bodies. I risk my life to go there to save people."
The miners are suspected to have died of starvation and dehydration, although no causes of death have been released. I'm Karen Chamas.
It could be a week or more before homeowners in the Los Angeles area are allowed to check on their fire-damaged properties. More than 80,000 people are still under evacuation orders, and many do not know what, if anything, is left of their houses, apartments, and possessions. County Fire Chief Anthony Moroney says residents eager to enter burned areas to see what's left of their homes or search for valuables need to be patient. He says the rubble can contain asbestos, lead, or other dangerous materials. The popular short video app TikTok may soon be unavailable to its 170 million American users. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
The U.S. Supreme Court could decide on Friday about whether TikTok should shut down in a few days under a federal law that seeks to enforce its sale by the Chinese company that owns the social media platform. Two Democratic senators are urging President Joe Biden to extend the TikTok deadline by 90 days.
We're asking for more time.
Democratic Senator Ed Markey.
Even as we're debating, TikTok users are flocking to a Chinese app with no reported presence in the United States.
Currently, federal law requires that the video sharing platform divest itself from its China-based parent company, ByteDance, or shut down its U.S. operations this weekend. President-elect Donald Trump's pick for national security advisor, Florida Representative Mike Waltz, also said in an interview this week that Trump is exploring options to preserve TikTok. Haya Panjwani, Washington.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, January 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vice President-elect J.D. Vance credits his grandmother and Kentucky roots for his success.
After the greatest political comeback in American history, we're going to lead the greatest economic comeback in American history under Donald Trump's leadership.
African analysts weigh in on what governing for a second Trump term may look like. Human Rights Watch says governments and armed groups are intensifying abuses in Africa. Kenya is on high alert as Tanzania grapples with an outbreak of the Marburg virus.
Because of the interconnectedness of our region, we have reactivated our systems, including our surveillance, risk communication, infection prevention control.
And Liberian President Boakai suspends the chair of the country's elections commission. The stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Republican Vice President-elect J.D. Vance rose from humble beginnings. He grew up in a struggling industrial town in the Midwestern state of Ohio. He went on to attend an Ivy League school and now will be one of the youngest vice presidents in history. VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti takes us back to his roots.
J.D. Vance, minutes after he was elected as Vice President of the United States.
After the greatest political comeback in American history, we're going to lead the greatest economic comeback in American history under Donald Trump's leadership.
This stage is a long way from the back roads of Middle America. Jackson, Kentucky isn't where Vance was born, but this is where he calls home.
Now, when I proposed to my wife, I said, honey, I come with $120,000 worth of law school debt and a cemetery plot on a mountainside in eastern Kentucky.
Breathitt County, Kentucky Sheriff John Holland drives us on a dusty dirt road and parks on a slight hill. He opens a rusty gate to show us that plot.
Grandmother Bonnie Blanton Vance.
Vance's grandmother was known as Mama.
He always came down here with Mama, and she would bring him to the mountains to let him see what mountain life was, and he evidently liked it.
Vance was born here in Middletown, Ohio, and raised mainly by his strict Mama, who cursed a lot and kept 19 loaded handguns in the house. With his stepfather's last name, J.D. Hamill won his first election, ironically as vice president of his Middletown high school class. He served as a Marine and then graduated summa cum laude from The Ohio State University. Then on to Yale, where Vance clicked with fellow law student Usha Chilakode, his future wife. Vance became known nationally through his 2016 bestseller-turned-movie, Hillbilly Elegy, about working-class America. It stars Glenn Close as a blunt mama to a young J.D.
But you got to decide you want to be somebody or not.
With the support of then-former President Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, the boy from Ohio who loves Kentucky, was elected as a senator from Ohio. And a quick 2 years later,
J.D. Vance to be the next vice president of the United States.
Trump chose Vance as his running mate, but he got off to a rough start, having previously called Trump, quote, reprehensible, and having claimed to be, quote, a never Trump guy. Now, Vance's policies reflect Trump's. And when asked, did the former president lose the 2020 election?
No. I think there are serious problems in 2020. So did Donald Trump lose the election? Not by the words that I would use.
Vance is hawkish on China and East Asia, opposes military aid to Ukraine, and...
Ma'am.
In answer to my question on the Israel-Hamas conflict,
Kamala Harris on the one hand says that she really cares about civilian casualties, and yet she refuses to give Israel the weapons that allow them to minimize civilian casualties.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vance, at age 40, will be the third youngest vice president in history.
Let's get to work and make it happen.
Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
As U.S. President-elect Donald Trump prepares to be sworn into office on Monday, African analysts weigh in on what governing for the second-term president may look like for the continent compared to his first term. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's first term included the launch of some initiatives for Africa. However, many people remember him for referring to the continent using degrading language. Edgar Githua is a professor of international relations at Strathmore University in Kenya.
What he called Africa a shithole, excuse my French.
Estimated at over 1 billion people, Africa's population is growing fast and expected to reach 2.5 billion by 2050, according to various estimates. It's a big market that plays a key role in the global economy, Githua says. And in terms of business and trade, Trump may be interested in Africa, but only because of the inroads China has made here.
Since China is hell-bent on capturing Africa as a business destination, so Trump will come to Africa not so much because he really cares about Africa, but because he's coming to counter Chinese influence on the African soil. So that fight, that proxy war, that geopolitical repositioning, in my view, is what could probably benefit Africa.
But Trump's first term saw the birth of initiatives such as Prosper Africa, aimed at facilitating economic engagement between the U.S. and African nations. Since its launch in 2019, the U.S. has helped close nearly 3,000 deals across 49 countries for a value of more than $120 billion, according to figures shared on the initiative's website. While every American president establishes his own policy, many programs, including Prosper Africa, AGOA, or the African Growth and Opportunity Act, and PEPFAR, or the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, continue beyond the end of president's terms because they have solid bipartisan support in Congress. No matter who's in power in Washington, countries need to redefine what they want and how they want to work with the new administration, Rwandan economic analyst Teddy Kaberuka tells VOA. And while Trump's America First policy may suggest more focus on America, some emerging economies in Africa still can benefit, he says.
Because if he is focused on boosting the domestic production, obviously the U.S. will import a lot of raw material from all over the world, and most likely in Africa, being in minerals, being in agriculture.
Kaberuka says the Ukraine war has hurt African economies, especially the grain supply disruption it caused, triggering a shortage of about 30 million metric tons of grain in Africa in the first year of the war alone, according to the Atlantic Council, a policy research organization based in Washington. He says Trump didn't engage in wars during his first term and complimented the president-elect for publicly stating he aimed to help end the Ukraine war shortly after he takes office. In the Sahel, a region recently plagued by coups, the U.S. closed two military bases and withdrew from Niger last year at the request of a junta that staged a coup the prior year. Their presence, U.S. officials said, was to help the region's counterterrorism efforts. Trump will take the oath of office Monday. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch says African governments continue to crack down and wrongly arrest political opponents, critics and activists and journalists. The rights group also says armed forces and armed groups in some African countries have targeted civilians, killing them and driving them from their homes. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The conflict in Sudan and Ethiopia feature prominently in a Human Rights Watch report released Thursday. It says that in Sudan, the war between armed forces and the rebel Rapid Support Forces has displaced 12 million people, destroyed infrastructure, and blocked humanitarian assistance. In Ethiopia, Rights Group investigators found that government forces in the Amhara region committed widespread attacks against medical professionals, patients, and health facilities. Mosi Segun is the head of the Human Rights Watch Africa Division. She says armed conflict is not the only form of rights violation on the continent.
On top of all of that, you have all of the civic space restriction abuses, you know, including just the intolerance for freedom of expression, intolerance for freedom of association and assembly. Protests are being clamped down on people who are pushing for their rights, you know, or to even comment on government policies and measures are being hunted down. Here in East Africa, we are seeing a very disturbing been trained towards abductions.
Kenya has captured the attention of human rights groups for recent alleged abductions of anti-government protesters and activists from foreign countries, some of whom have been deported to Turkey and Uganda. The Human Rights Watch report also focuses on the seemingly endless conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where civilians are killed, women raped, and attacks on camps for the internally displaced continue to push more people into neighboring countries. Congo has accused Rwanda for supporting M23 rebels, an allegation Rwanda denies. Clementine de Monsieur, Human Rights Watch senior researcher, says the expansion of conflict worsens civilians' harm.
It's certainly a concern to see the regionalization of the conflict. We've seen in the past cycles of violence in eastern Congo and across the Great Lakes region that have had a devastating impact on civilian populations. And we're not seeing significant signs of pressure on the different parties to the conflict to reduce violations and harm to civilians.
The report notes that countries in West Africa ruled by the military, like Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, have cracked down on opposition and dissent, freedom of expression, and backsliding in the fight against corruption. It knows that in southern Africa, Mozambique is grappling with post-election violence in which hundreds of people have been killed. Human Rights Watch's newly released World Report reviewed human rights records of more than 100 countries, including 25 in Africa. Despite the widespread abuses and violence against people in Africa, HRW notes that, like the rest of the world, African people are resisting and pushing back against autocratic rule and abuse of their rights. It notes they are also mobilizing on social media and streets to demand an end to the abuses and bad governance that has contributed to divisions and conflict among communities. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 17. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Kenya is on high alert following a Marburg virus outbreak in neighboring Tanzania that has resulted in 8 deaths. Kenya's Ministry of Health says, given the proximity of the Kajira region to Kenya's border, the government has implemented procedures to manage the health emergencies in the area. As Marine Ojiambo reports, the World Health Organization says a national rapid team has been deployed to support the Tanzanian government in fighting the disease.
The World Health Organization has assessed the risk of Marburg outbreak in the Republic of Tanzania as high at the national and regional levels and at the global level. The virus has so far claimed the lives of 8 people. It is said to have a high case fatality rate of 89%, with healthcare workers being among the affected cases. Kenya's Director General of Health, Patrick Amoth, has assured the country that his ministry is on high alert following the outbreak of the virus.
Marburg disease outbreak in the United Republic of Tanzania, because of the interconnectedness of our region, we are equally at risk, and therefore we have reactivated our systems, including our surveillance, risk communication, infection prevention control.
The World Health Organization says the delayed detection and isolation of cases together with ongoing contact tracing indicates a lack of information of the current outbreak, with more cases expected to be identified. Yesterday, Thursday, WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus, during a virtual media briefing on global health issues, said a mobile laboratory is in the affected Kagera region and the treatment units have been established.
Last Friday, WHO received reports of suspected cases of Marburg virus disease in the United Republic of Tanzania. So far, 9 cases have been reported, including 8 deaths in 2 districts of the northwestern region of Kagera. The region is home to animals that are known to be reservoirs for the virus, including fruit bats, and there was an outbreak of Marburg in the same area in March 2023.
Tedros said the Tanzanian government should ensure the disease samples are collected and sent to the international reference laboratories.
We have issued advice to prevent further transmission of Marburg, to provide care for those infected, and to control the outbreak. We recommend that surveillance should be strengthened at relevant points of entry and in border regions in the United Republic of Tanzania, and that neighboring countries enhance their readiness for detecting, isolating, and treating cases. At this time, WHO advises against restrictions on travel and trade.
At the same time, conflicting reports from Tanzania indicates that the government has refuted claims that the country is experiencing an outbreak of the Marburg virus. Tanzania's health minister, Jenista Mhagama, said that analyzed samples indicate that all suspected cases tested negative for the disease. Marburg can be spread between people through direct contact or via blood and other bodily fluids of infected people, including contaminated bedding or clothing. For VOA Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Liberian President Joseph Boakai this week suspended indefinitely the chair of the National Elections Commission, NEC, David Etta Brown Lansana. This comes as the country is scheduled to hold by-elections in 2 months. Presidential Press Secretary Kula Fofana tells me that Commission Chair Brown Lansana took unilateral decisions, including the dismissal of 25 employees without the approval of the NEC Board of Commissioners.
As you know, the Election Commission, as per the Constitution, is a member of the executive. And the President also, despite it being one of the institutions that is in the Constitution and is a tenured position, but because of some of the actions that have been taken according to the letter, the President wrote the chair of the NEC based on the challenges that have been happening at the institution, some unilateral that the chairperson have taken over the past time, even when she was warned firing of 25 members of the commission, closing the institution for a period of a month, which jeopardizes the running activities of the institution, especially with the pending by-election. And because of those, the president felt that it was important to take that action to ensure that the sanity can be restored at the institution.
I know the statement says indefinite suspension, but let me ask, how long is indefinite?
Indefinite can be a long one. So as soon as the president decides what the next step of action is, we will also be coming to the public with that.
So what would this mean for future election preparation and execution? Because my understanding is that there should be by-election coming up perhaps in the next 2 months. Who takes care of that?
Well, the institution is an active institution. There is the Board of Commissioners. So whatever the action is, if the chairperson remains under suspension, the institution functions and all activities continue as it is. Upcoming by-elections will continue as well.
So should we expect that someone is going to be appointed in order for the institution to continue?
As I said, there hasn't been any further action taken as yet, but there is a functioning Board of Commissioners, and the institution will continue to function even without the chairperson.
I've been reading now, some people are criticizing the president and your government. Some people claim some dictatorial decisions are being made. Let me get the chance to comment on some of these criticisms.
Well, I mean, all the actions that the president has taken, they're all in the confines of the law and the legal instruments that is being referenced here is that the president can take actions against any of such institutions for a cause.
Kula Fofana is the press secretary to Liberian President Joseph Boakai. She was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. The Associated Press reports that the U.S. has imposed sanctions on the leader of Sudan's military in a devastating war that is spreading famine in the country. The U.S. announced the penalties on Thursday. The Treasury Department says Sudanese Armed Forces leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan has bombed hospitals, schools, and markets his power struggle against an armed rival. The U.S. also accused Al-Burhan of blocking aid as famine caused by the war spreads in Sudan. Sudan's army, aligned foreign ministry on Thursday, rejected the U.S. sanctions as immoral. It said that the sanctions lack the most basic foundations of justice and transparency. The main opposition coalition in Guinea-Conakry has called for its members to withdraw from the country's legislative body. This after the ruling junta missed the deadline for a return to democratic rule. The Associated Press reports that the focus vive the Guinea coalition group, which includes the country's main opposition parties, called for its members to withdraw from the National Transitional Council in a statement late on Wednesday. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with athletics. As organizers of the London Marathon, a World Athletics Platinum Labour Road Race have confirmed that 31-year-old Perez Jepchirchir of Kenya and 28-year-old Alexander Mutsio Munyo, also of Kenya, will defend their London Marathon titles on the 27th of April 2025. Also in the race are world record holder Ruth Cheptegei, also from the East African nation of Kenya, two-time Berlin Marathon champion Ethiopia Tigzid Ashafa, and two-time World Cross Country champion Jacob Kiplimo of Uganda, who will be making his debut over the classic distance. They will join Olympic Marathon champions Sifan Hassan and Tamirat Tola, whose participation was confirmed earlier this week. It means the three fastest women in history, Cheptegei, Ashafa and Hassan, will all toe the line in the British capital. In netball news, Uganda national netball team, the She Cranes, have continued their preparations ahead of the 2025 Vitality Nations Cup in England. The She Cranes will depart for England at the end of January to begin early preparations for the prestigious tournament. The Vitality Nations Cup, scheduled for February 1st to 9th, will feature Uganda alongside South Africa, Malawi, and host England. Defender Gloria Aya is confident that the She Cranes will put up a good performance.
We expect to top up, as in the level we were in, so we expect to go to another level.
And onto football news, where Inter Milan have issued a message of support for Nigerian midfielder Ebenezer Akinsamiro after he was racially abused in Italy. The midfielder, who is on loan at Sampdoria from Inter, received racist abuse during a Serie B march against Brescia. The fans made monkey noises towards the player, and when Sampdoria scored, he equally responded and the referee booked him. He was later subbed off. And out of basketball, where Rwanda local basketball powerhouses APR and Rwanda Energy Group REG will face off in the Rwanda Super Cup on Friday, January 17th at the BK Arena. Introduced by the 2023 General Assembly of Uganda, the Super Cup serves as a curtain raiser for the new season of Rwanda Basketball League. It pits the league champions against the winners of the Rwanda Cup in a one-game battle. In tennis, the seventh edition of the annual Azimuth Shipping Lines Junior Tennis Championships is currently underway in Lagos, Nigeria. The young boys and girls are competing in various categories of the under 12, under 14, and under 16 levels in an attempt to clinch laurels in the developmental event. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.
On Monday, January 20th, the American people will again watch history in the making with the inauguration of their 47th president, Donald John Trump. VOA will broadcast the presidential inauguration live starting at 1600 UTC for people around the world to see democracy in action and how the peaceful transfer of power works. Tune in right here on the Voice of the